From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The legislative session down to its final hours. A lot of questions remain as we sit down to record. We'll discuss where things stand as we head toward adjournment. We'll talk about it and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler's off this week, but we have with us Kent Redfield. He's Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Illinois, Springfield. Kent, good to have you with us again.
Good to be here.
And also we have Capital News Illinois reporter Andrew Adams. And Andrew, always good to have you back as well.
Thanks for having me.
So the legislature, I always say this, it's like a bit like a kid who waits till the last minute to finish homework. But in fairness, there's been a lot of negotiations going on for months as they try to reach agreement on some key issues. And one of the biggest ones they face, of course, is coming up with a state budget. They face a deadline to get things done by the end of Saturday, the 31st, or it would take more votes to pass, and that could be a problem. So, Andrew, where did we stand as we sat down to record this on Friday morning?
As of right now, we have no kind of public version of the budget. They have not reached an agreement publicly about what will be in, what programs are being cut, if there will be new taxes, any of that. What we do know is that they're setting up for a last-minute decision as of now, Friday morning. There's some procedural things they're doing to allow themselves to be able to make changes to their budget plan really up until the 11th hour. And like you said, if they go past their deadline, which is tomorrow night, May 31st at midnight, they will need more votes. They'll need three-fifths to get the budget passed. And if they're struggling to get, you know, the 60 or the 50% votes they need right now, it'll be all the worse. It'll take days and days to reach an agreement if they miss that deadline.
So there has been a lot of shifting of what we call revenue estimates, you know, projections of how much money the state will have to spend in the next fiscal year. And most recently, it was the governor's budget office coming out and saying about $500 million less. But there are some people say it could be a lot more. It depends on what the federal government does. So right now, the governor this week, I think this was maybe Wednesday, came out and said that he won't sign a budget that's not balanced. He also won't sign one with a broad-based tax hike. So that takes some options off the table, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, certainly does. But the big revenue fix, which would be taxing services, has been off the table, I think, since the governor was, first running for office practically. And so it's a lot of tweaking because of how the revenue structure in Illinois is currently designed. And, we went for the home run to try to get rid of the flat tax, the limit on this income tax at a flat rate. And that failed, and so no one's willing to open that up. And, if you're not talking sales tax and you're not talking income tax, then you're looking for coins in the couch. I mean, it really is difficult to come up with, significant revenue. So I don't expect that there's going to be much on the revenue side, and I think it's going to be very difficult to, get, super specific. The more that they want can kind of fudged up. What's worth saying is, yes, the governor says I won't sign a balanced budget, but the way Illinois' law and constitution is written, a balanced budget really is in the eye of the beholder. We've got vague language about saying expenditures have to meet expected revenues, but there's no judicially enforceable balanced budget language in the state constitution. And so, whatever they pass, the governor will declare that it's balanced, and then the federal government may make whatever we pass totally irrelevant if we're having to deal with massive Medicaid cuts or other sorts of federal revenue that we normally assume. So there's a sense in which these are really are issues that people care about a lot, but there's another sense in which the final product, which might not come until the fall, might look completely different from what we're talking about in the next couple of days.
Yeah, Andrew, talk about that. I mean, is there a possibility, have you heard discussions of something that sort of, I don't want to say kicks the can down the road? That's not really what they're doing. They're just trying to get a better picture of what the revenue and situation's going to look like, as well as the expenditures. So is it possible we see something that just gets us through a few months and then they try to make adjustments later in the year?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible that, you know, they'll pass a budget and it might be the budget for the entire year, but they might pass it with the full intention to have a special session this summer or come back during veto session and make some pretty big adjustments later in the year based on if we know anything more from the federal government, if we have more data about, you know, state level revenues. Those things can make a big difference. And, you know, while we're talking about revenues from the federal government, genuinely, it has thrown an absolute wrench in everyone's process, and it was already a fairly messy process this year, that there's just so much uncertainty coming from Washington, and so much of the state's budget is reimbursements from the feds or direct grants from the feds or state grants. It's really complicating the process. It's hard to say with certainty that any dollar figure from Washington will be there when they say it will. So, you know, a lot is up in the air.
Yeah, Kent, I'll tell you, going back, when I try to think about the most difficult budget years, one that comes to mind to me, and this does not count the Bruce Rauner years where we had no budget, but going back to 2001, when 9/11 occurred, and the country virtually shut down for at least a few days there, and it also, you know, the airlines weren't flying, there were so many different things going on, and it really did impact state revenues in that year, and that was a difficult one. But going into a budget cycle, I don't remember anything quite like this. Charlie has said on the show several times that it's the most difficult budget to craft he's seen since he's been watching the process. That's more than half a century. So you've watched for a long time too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I always defer to Charlie, but yes, this is so unusual to have such uncertainty in terms of major parts of the revenue source. And the people that are making the decisions, if you join the legislature after 2019, you know, 2020, you've dealt with difficult situations and trade-offs, but you have not dealt with the kinds of stark choices that you're dealing with here. We've had, when we fixed the Rauner years with the budget, with not having a budget for a couple of years, you know, we passed a budget, we passed a tax increase. Governor Pritzker took office with $8 billion of unpaid bills, but, you know, we had a way out of that that you could see this is what the revenues are going to look like. You know, the pandemic throws that into turmoil, but then we've had a lot of federal money, COVID relief funds, to smooth things out. And so, it, you know, the stark trade-offs that we're looking at, you know, even before the federal situation being completely, you know, turned upside down by the new administration were, you know, really difficult. And so legislators don't want to, you know, they don't want to make tough choices. They want to ratify agreements and do good things for their, you know, for their districts. And so this is a lot of cross pressure that is going to make it very, very difficult.
I'll ask both of you this, and Andrew, you can answer first, but Republicans have argued about how the budget has gone up, how spending has gone up over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years or so, and it is quite a bit. And as Kent said, there's been a lot of federal money coming in, but now with that money starting to subside and you're not sure even about money that for years has been there, now what? You know, so basically, are we looking at many cuts in this budget, or are we looking to try to somehow just meet the expectations, I guess?
I would say we're definitely closer to meeting expectations. And one thing I'll say about kind of that Republican criticism of, you know, the budget keeps going up, bigger budget, is over the past, you know, 6 or 7 years that Governor Pritzker has been in office, the number has gone up pretty significantly. But it's important to remember that many of those years were incredibly inflationary. So when you actually adjust the budget for inflation and take into consideration some of the other factors, it's going up, but much more modestly than some people would say. And some years it even goes down when adjusted for inflation, when inflation was very, very high. But this year is like we've said, very tight. So I expect that the budget is going to stay, you know, honestly, mostly flat, maybe some cuts here and there. There are some important cuts to programs that have been, you know, very politically charged. There's a healthcare program for non-citizens, for, you know, undocumented immigrants. That is Governor Pritzker said he wanted to cut it in his budget address earlier this year, and there's no reason to expect that the legislature would go back on that. So there are some cuts, but mostly flat, really, is what I expect.
And a status quo budget, you know, is a cut. I mean, you shift between different priorities, or you cost shift. The waste and fraud is certainly there. It's there in mega corporations. This is part of this is human nature, but these are real trade-offs with a lot of we can't make everybody a winner in a situation where you've got declining resources, and that's where we're at.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Professor Kent Redfield and Andrew Adams with Capital News Illinois. Let me move on to a few other subjects. One of those, which would impact the budget, Andrew, is what is known as something to impact and affect Tier 2 pensions. And these are people who started after a certain time working for the state. Their benefits are not as good as the people that were working before that. There was a cutoff point. But a lot of people saying the Tier 2 is not good enough. A lot of fears of lawsuits coming. So what's happening with that? Anything?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Around about 2011, the state pushed these giant reforms to the pension system and created this Tier 2, this kind of second level of pensions that are just much lower benefits than the old pensions. And there's a provision in federal law called the Safe Harbor Provision, which basically means that pension systems like Illinois's have to provide benefits at least as good as Social Security, basically. And there's real concern that the Tier 2 pensions do not meet that minimum threshold, which means the state, as people who started working, you know, 15 years ago, start to retire and start collecting those Tier 2 pension benefits in greater numbers, the state will very quickly have to step in and boost benefits to meet that safe harbor threshold. Now, how much of that is actually going to happen is a little bit of a controversial subject. People disagree. But there has been a big push to reform Tier 2, increase benefits a little bit to make sure that we meet that threshold and to make sure that the unions that are a big source of support for the Democratic Party in Illinois are kept happy. Now there's a proposal going around that's still being debated, discussed in Springfield that has union support and that they say will not significantly impact the budget while addressing these concerns about Social Security requirements and these concerns that they have about the benefits just not being good enough to attract and retain employees. Whether or not it will impact the state budget is again something that people disagree about. So there's real push, a real movement in Springfield to address these concerns around Tier 2 pensions. And there's a good chance that it's going to happen in the next, however long we have, the next 36 hours. But it might not. It might be pushed back to a later part of the year or, you know, back to the drawing board, back to negotiations. Only time will tell.
And I should mention, both Kent and I are part of the state university retirement system. Kent, of course, is retired already, but we are not affected by Tier 2. We started much earlier. So go ahead, Kent.
Yeah. And, you know, the ultimate problem with being out of compliance with federal law is that because of we offering the pension system, then if you are a state employee, a university employee, you're not doing federal withholding. You're not doing Social Security. If they declare the whole state out of compliance in terms of its of in terms of federal law, then you could end up with every state employee suddenly paying Social Security withholding in addition to being participants in a pension system. And that would be big hits to both employees and to the state. I mean, that's a disaster. That's not going to happen because we're going to fix that part of it. The argument for doing something with Tier 2 is, you know, I've got a sheriff that's county sheriff that's been around under Tier 1. I hire a new sheriff, you know, a new officer. They're doing the same job. And one is dramatically earning, you know, the pay differential is dramatic. And so how do you recruit? How do you keep people, you know, within the system? All of those sorts of things. And, you know, this is the result of massive underfunding of the state's pension systems over a very long period of time. You know, this is, and we have futzed around with this forever. And we passed, actually tried to reduce pensions, earned pensions, and it was ruled unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court. So, you know, we're stuck, and anything you put into Tier 2 is forever, you know. And so if you make changes, you can't, well, that was a little too much, you know, that's gonna mess up our ability to, you know, keep in good graces with the credit rating people. There are no takebacks in terms of, you know, pension sweeteners and stuff. So it's a very contentious, very tough issue.
All right. Also, another issue that's still on the table, and we've been talking about this for months as well, involves mass transit in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. Now, Andrew, you've been following this pretty closely, I know. What is going on with that? Do we expect there's going to be some deal worked out here in the final hours?
I've been following it very closely, and I do live in Chicago, so I hear it on the street. People are worried. The issue is that there's a giant budget gap, $770 million a year for the transit agencies in Chicago and the suburbs. And that number is only going to go up. So they're asking for $1.5 billion a year from the state. That's the ask. And over the past day or two, they're finally, after probably 2 years of really intense negotiations and discussions for even longer before that, language was announced, put out in the public about what that fix would actually look like. Now, it's a little bit contentious. The House and the Senate don't necessarily agree. And from what I've heard, folks are a little bit upset about how this was announced. Lots of it is not quite done yet, even though some people are saying that it is. But broad strokes is there's going to be some significant tax increases in Chicago and the suburbs on things like real estate transfers, electric vehicle charging, tollway use. And these are increases that if they affect you, you'd probably notice. You'd say, wow, this is a little bit higher than it has been. And alongside with that, a bunch of reforms, new mandates for mass transit, and completely restructuring the agency that oversees, you know, trains and buses in the region. So it's a big, big move, and they're really coming down to the wire on it. These service cuts would begin this summer and this fall, and they're talking about 40% reductions in the number of trains and buses coming. So they're really down to the wire, but I expect something to move, if not today or tomorrow, this summer.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Andrew, and no offense to you or anybody that lives in the Chicago area, but as somebody who lives in Springfield, I've got to say, I don't want to be paying to keep the buses running in Chicago. I hope they do run. I hope everybody's happy with it. But I would think that's a big issue, is trying to get people who aren't served by the CTA, you know, and the bus, all these other systems, you know, Metra and all these others, how to get them on board with something if they need to vote. Is there going to be any impact to the downstaters?
Yeah, so there's a couple things going on here. One is because it's not just Chicago, it's Chicago and the suburbs. It's really two-thirds, 70% of the population of the state is affected by this. So it's a lot of people, and it's the, you know, economic heart of the state. So it's really important kind of abstractly to everyone in the state that this system works and it's not falling apart and costing a lot of money. Second thing is most of the taxes do only affect Chicagoland. Most, basically all of them, except for, I think, some of the electric vehicle charging taxes only affect folks up there. And third, this package is almost certainly going to include some funding reforms to downstate transit agencies as well. There have been some concerns that the state matching grants that pay for a lot of the bus service down here, including places like Springfield, Champaign, Carbondale, Southern Illinois, Peoria, Rockford, you know, places around the state, they're not, because of changes in ridership post-pandemic, they're not able to meet kind of the minimum thresholds for the state to start kicking money in. And they're really concerned that they're going to face their own huge problems in the next year or two. And so there's a reform to that system that should keep those transit systems happy without too much impact to the state itself. So there's a little bit for everyone in here. And the biggest effects are going to the places that are most affected by the problem, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kent, that's I guess, the way you have to do it, right? It's a little something for everybody.
Yeah, what complicates this is, you know, you're talking about three different systems, three different areas. You've got CTA, think roughly Chicago. You've got Metra, which is more like suburban Cook. I mean, these are not hard and fast. And you've got PACE, which is the collar counties. And so you got a structure that you got in the early 70s to put a umbrella organization, the Regional Transit Authority, on top of that. But you still kept these three separate kind of organizations and empires with employees and supporters and unions that are all involved with, you know, delivering the services. And so, you know, that's worked so well over the last, you know, 45 years or whatever it is, that now we have this monumental, you know, whatever Andrew's figure was, $7 billion funding crisis. And so there's an attempt to bring all these things together, and that gets you into, we're restructuring. How many appointments does the governor get? How many appointments does the mayor get? How many appointments does the Cook County chairman get? How many appointments go to the various collar counties? And so organizationally, I mean, even if you didn't have to pay for it, it's still this huge fight amongst all of these different entities that have really solidified over this very long history. And they cooperate kind of, but obviously it's a mess. You know, we sent legislators to Germany and Europe to kind of, let's see how a real system works, and, you know, whether or not we're carrying some of that wisdom back, you know, I don't know. This is in typical legislative fashion. We're having this monumental discussion about the economic engine of the state of Illinois. Transit sustains that with the clock ticking. This is not a good situation, and it's not a good way to make public policy, but it is, unfortunately, too often the Illinois way.
Well, let me quickly mention a couple of other items this week. Andrew, give us kind of an update on what's known as Aid in Dying. This is legislation that passed the House on late Thursday night. Still needs to go through the Senate. It's controversial, but what are its chances? What does it do, and what are its chances?
Yeah, so this legislation would legalize a process. Some people call it medical aid in dying. Some people call it medically assisted suicide. Some critics call it physician-assisted suicide. It's a process where a doctor prescribes you a lethal dose of a medication. And this would only be available to folks who are terminally ill and of sound mind and, you know, capable of making informed consent. And there are lots of safeguards in the bill to make sure the system isn't abused. This is a process that's legal in 10 or 11 other states. It's legal in Canada. It's legal in some other countries. And it's the advocates for it are mostly terminally ill people who would like to have a little more agency on how they end their life. But it has lots of ethical concerns. There's religious concerns. Pro-life folks, Catholic folks, some other religious folks are, very against it. Some disability advocates worry that this kind of system would be used to encourage them to take advantage of medical aid in dying when they don't necessarily want to. But I will say that religious people are divided. Disability advocates are divided. This is in many ways a kind of non-traditional issue that divides groups that are usually pretty aligned. That said, it passed on a fairly partisan vote Thursday night in the House. The bill mostly originated in the Senate, so it's had a long time to cook, for lack of a better metaphor, over in that chamber. I expect it is gaining momentum. There's a good chance that it will pass in the Senate in the next couple days. If not, this bill has been around for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. So even if it does not make it through this session, I don't expect it to go away anytime soon.
In just about 30 seconds or so here, Kent, I'll throw this to you. President Trump throwing a curveball this week, another one, I guess you could say, in which he pardoned a notorious former gang leader, the Gangster Disciples, in Chicago, Larry Hoover. He'd been serving time at a federal prison, a supermax prison out in Colorado. He still faces a huge prison sentence here in Illinois, but now I guess that's in Governor Pritzker's lap if he wants to somehow commute the sentence of Larry Hoover. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on this move.
Yeah, hugely controversial. And so the substance of it is, is this person rehabilitated in some way that would justify, commuting his sentence and getting him out of prison? Politically, it's the last thing the governor needs, or maybe it's an indication of what it's going to be like trying to run for president and maybe or maybe not running for reelection, because there is support within Chicago, within the African-American community for what President Trump did. And so, Pritzker's response is, he's got a sentence to serve. I don't deal with pardons unless somebody makes a application of the pardon board and they make a recommendation to me. So he clearly was not getting out in front of it one way or another, and probably would like it basically to go away. But that's when the previous discussion about the downsides of remaining governor while you're trying to run for president is having to deal. Just literally don't know what's going to pop up.
All right. Well, once again, want to mention we are recording this show on a Friday morning. So some of the things we've talked about, we hope will be decided rather soon. And we will talk more on State Week next week with a legislative wrap up. That's all the time we have for this episode. Our panel included Professor Emeritus Kent Redfield and Andrew Adams with Capital News Illinois. Charlie Wheeler will be back next week. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.